This is JimPinto.com, e-news number 302, 22nd of March 2012. This e-news is read by Jim's text-to-speech robot, McJimbo, or McJimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. The 6 killer apps of prosperity. Over the past centuries, Western cultures have shifted prosperity to Europe and then North America. How did that happen? Niall Ferguson teaches history and business administration at Harvard and is a senior research fellow at several other universities, including Oxford. In a TED speech, he asks what the West had that others didn't. Ferguson suggests that 6 ideas from Western culture made the difference. He calls them the 6 killer apps. 1. Competition. Monarchies replaced by competing businesses. 2. Scientific revolution, major technology. 3. Representative government, optimal social and political system. 4. Modern medicine, healthcare. 5. The consumer society, laws of supply and demand. 6. The work ethic, higher savings and capital accumulation. Ferguson's major point is that these elements institutionalized in Western society a few centuries ago, led to the great economic divergence from the rest of the world. Westerners not only grew richer, they grew taller, healthier, and lived longer. By the early 20th century, just a dozen Western countries controlled 60% of the world's land surface and population, and 74% of the global economy. The problem for the West is that these concepts are now diffusing to other countries and continents. The process of divergence has been replaced by one of convergence. All the other countries are catching on and catching up fast. We should not be concerned about Americans no longer being richer. What is worrisome is the tendency of Western societies to delete their own killer apps. Today, the U.S. ranks 50th in the world for public trust in the ethics of politicians, 42nd for various forms of bribery, 40th for standards of auditing and financial reporting. It is the top of the global list in only one area, investor protection. The West needs to reboot the whole system. What we are risking is not just decline, but downright collapse. Think about it. Item 2. Automation innovation paradigms. The large automation companies are developing mostly extensions of old stuff, reincarnations of tired concepts that cannot generate real growth and just won't cut it much longer. They're too conservative to do much beyond short-term extrapolations. You know what Steve Jobs said, if it's good, don't do it, it's got to be insanely great. Perhaps only a gutsy CEO with good market insights can make that kind of call. And how many of those are there in the automation business? The 2 largest segments of industrial measurement and control systems, programmable logic controllers, PLC, and distributed control systems, DCS, were both 1970s-era developments. Automation is overdue for a revolution, an inflection point. Here is a major case in point. Decentralized control. The inventor of the PLC, Dick Morley, has been preaching peer-to-peer decentralized control systems for 2 decades, but no one has really run with it to prove the practical advantages of real alternatives in large systems. The automation majors are too chicken to invest significantly to prove the point. They are waiting for some gutsy little company to prove the overwhelming benefits. Meantime, most top managers in the automation world are too busy looking into their rear-view mirrors to see the future coming at them. Fast. Look for new leaders to blaze the path to explosive new growth. Item 3. ACP Thin Manager 6.0 launch. Let me share some of the excitement I felt as the keynote speaker at a recent conference organized by Automation Control Products, a decade-old startup based in Alpharetta, Georgia, the developer of Thin Manager software. There were about 100 attendees. All from industrial end user companies like Potash, Frito-Lay, Kroger, and Nestle, plus control systems integrators and industrial software veterans. These were all practical automation engineers and technicians who had oodles of experience with running process plants, automation factories and giant packaging lines. Anyone with Thin Manager software has access to literally thousands, or even millions of control and display variables using thin clients and multiple monitors located anywhere. And there is even an iPad or iPhone thin manager app. These are the seeds of GRULI distributed control systems. I'll be doing a keynote speech again for the launch of Thin Manager 6.0, the most significant version of Thin Manager ever released. The event will be held on Monday, 16th of April at the Atlanta Airport Marriott Gateway. I'll be speaking on Tuesday, April 17th at 11 a.m. If you're an automation or plant engineer, please come, participate and touch. It'll change your view of where automation is heading. Item 4. Internet is changing the brain. The internet is actually changing our brains. It has become a primary form of external memory and our brains have become reliant on the virtually instant availability of information. Our brains are adapting, and some think that intelligence is improving. Rote memorization wastes valuable brain power. People don't need to remember addresses or phone numbers anymore, they can just look them up. Clearly, modern education should focus not on learning by rote anymore, but on creative thinking. Some think that multitasking, the phenomenon of continuous partial attention, causes an actual adaptation of the brain. Instead of focusing on tasks, incoming email becomes a distraction and cannot be ignored. Deep, focused reading is becoming increasingly difficult. Online browsing has created a new form of reading, in which people aren't really reading, but rather power browsing. Instead of left to right, up to down reading, they seem to scan through titles, bullet points, and information that stands out. When it comes to reading more than a few minutes, the mind begins to wander. Certainly comprehension and attention are at risk. Gradually, internet use is changing neural pathways. It's addictive. Even after unplugging, habitual users feel a craving for the stimulation received from gadgets. Without it, boredom sets in, people get irritated till they get their fix. After spending time online, their brain wants to get back for more, making it difficult to unplug and concentrate on other tasks. How do these effects of technology addiction extrapolate in the future? Item 5. Emerging Smart TV. The idea of a smart internet-connected TV is emerging quickly. In a world where all the latest gadgets and appliances are expected to be hooked up with internet connectivity to a variety of apps and social networks, TV manufacturers are getting in on the game. At the Consumer Electronics Show in January 2012, the top TV makers, Samsung, LG, Sony, Vizio, were all offering internet-connected big flat screens. Google has partnered with most of them, each offering its own way to put the TV back to the center of home entertainment, with access to apps from Netflix, Hulu, Facebook and the like. Samsung is working on integrating voice and motion control into its new TV sets, enabling users to speak commands or change channels and settings with just a wave. Vizio is the first to join with the cloud service company OnLive to put streaming games on its TV sets. All Google TV partners have added the OnLive Viewer app, which lets users manage their accounts and watch others play games. Playing live games with others over internet TV is getting close. I don't like to watch regular broadcast TV anymore, fixed broadcast times with too many advertising interruptions. Instead, I now have a choice of watching recent and not so recent movies and TV shows, with the luxury of no interruptions. Plus control with my clicker when I want to take a break. On Netflix, I pay $7.99 a month to watch an unlimited number of movies and TV shows, but they are mostly old reruns. Apple TV tends to offer the latest movies and TV shows, including major TV series, at a typical price of $3.99, while Amazon.com offers some, but not all, of the same at $2.99. Heck, that's better than paying big cable TV bills. As usual, there are three feedbacks on this issue of e-news. Feedback 1 is from David Bell in Canada, who is worried about the latest generation of young people. David writes, I've been doing some research on millennials, born after 1980, trying to understand their characteristics. I'm worried. I have spent 10 years working with startups, 60 to 80 millennials, a few of whom were extraordinary and successful. A significant percentage, 30 to 40%, were crippled by their own burned-in disabilities. Here are some of the salient characteristics. Up to 10,000 hours on digital games and or 20,000 hours on the net by mid-20s. Doubled adolescence dependency. 20 to 25 years of adolescence from age 10 to 35. Never challenged in school, expected to be entitled to high marks for almost nothing. React with anger when being challenged. They are addicted to social media, up to 400 to 800 messages per day. Some go through 700 messages in the 7 hours they are at school. They expect effortless, extraordinary success after graduation. This is in conflict with their economic reality. 2 years after graduation. 40 to 60% unemployment, or severe underemployment. They say that rules are irrelevant. They swamp the legal system with too many arrests, see the Vancouver hockey riots. I fear that this generation has the capacity to turn our society into a world brain wreck. My question to your e-news readers, what are your experiences working with millennials? Feedback too is from the irrepressible world traveler Bob Schaefer, who gives us his view of America from afar. Writes Bob. I have interesting debates, almost every night, with highly intelligent people from China, Vietnam, Thailand. They're truly interested in politics in the US but find it almost impossible to understand. I listen to myself, and I sound more cynical with each passing day. My major fear about America is that politicians will manage to screw it all up. I wonder if I'm getting more cynical as I get older, but then I catch some US network news and I realize it's not me. Watching US politics from afar is like watching reruns of the Benny Hill Show. Do you realize that the only civil servant positions in the US that do not require an exam to measure ability to perform the job are those at the top of all branches of the government, legislative, executive, and judicial? You have to take a test to carry the mail, but not to run the country. I propose an in-depth examination for all those seeking public office. I'm sure we can find enough smart people to devise a comprehensive examination for each position, history, economics, religion, art, management skills, technical knowledge. Think of it, no more election rubbish to sift through, no super PACs, no lobbyists, no ridiculous debates or commercials. Just the smartest people get the jobs. It'll work. Feedback 3. Richie Tabachnik responded to Bob Fritz's comments on unions and the auto industry. He writes, the first, obvious problem with Bob's commentary is that the US automakers are having a great year, and they are still unionized. GM just reported its best results in its history. Traveling the world as much as I do, I have noticed a trend towards increased presence of American cars in other parts of the world where they were a rarity just a few years ago. Our unionized car industry is a leader again. Germany produces fine cars and competes well internationally, but has a highly unionized workforce with wages and benefits much higher than those in the US. The same is true of automakers in Japan. Modern unions are partners in productivity and efficiency. The myth of corrupt, anti-business unions is a generation out of date. American labor can compete with anyone. It is among the most productive of the world's workforces. Popular anti-labor rhetoric comes from the political campaigns. It is not based on economic reality. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Send your email to Jim@jimpinto.com.